Do we have any apologies for absence?
Provost, apologies from Councillor Beattie, Councillor Boyes and also Mr Bourne.
Order of business.
Provost, as is printed in the agenda, can I draw members' attention to the follow paper which was circulated under separate cover relating to private item number 13, the executive leadership structure.
Okay, thank you. Are there any declarations of interest of any items on the agenda? Councillor Johnson and Councillor Thompson. And Councillor Rosie.
I've got declared an interest in item 10. Mr and Mrs King are known to me and I've taken advice from the monitoring officer and the council solicitor. Thank you.
Again, item 10, the social work complaints review panel. I sat on the panel, so declare an interest in that item.
Yeah, similar. I sat on the panel, so declare an interest.
Thank you. Right, minutes of meetings for approval. The Midlothian Council meeting of the 24th of March 2014. Yes?
Sorry, can I raise a minute for the Council meeting? And that it was on the vote that we took for the appointment of an elected member and the quality champion. And there has been some disquiet within the local press. Unfortunately, there was a slight error in the report where they had initially said Councillor Beattie had supported the Labour nomination, and they then corrected that. However, all the way through that, we were quite clear that our statements to the press were indeed accurate and have been accused of misleading and indeed picking on Councillor Beattie, who unfortunately isn't here today. But quite frankly, at the meeting, there were 14 members eligible to vote that day. The two members not being eligible to vote were the two nominees, which was Councillor Brian Pottinger and the Provost Joe Wallace. The vote that was taken was 7-6. There were seven members of the SNP administration eligible to vote. I watched quite clearly the vote and I saw clearly six members of the SNP administration voting for Councillor Wallace. I did not see Councillor Beattie voting for Councillor Wallace that day. I also made a point of watching the Labour vote, where all the eligible Labour members and Councillor Baxter voted for Labour's nomination for that post. Could I ask the Chief Executive to tell me, was there something missed here? Was there miscounting here? If Lisa Beattie did vote for Councillor Wallace, would the administration member who didn't identify themselves so that we can all be quite clear who it was? And I think that this isn't just about a vote for an equalities champion. This is about credibility in this chamber and people in this chamber being completely truthful with what they say and what way they voted. Now, I'm quite clear for my view, Lisa Beattie sat straight over there and I saw no hand going up whatsoever. I did actually see the other six, other seven SNP members vote. Other six SNP members vote for the Provost. So therefore, I must have seen some sort of illusion if Councillor Beattie's assumption is that she definitely voted for the Provost. What did I miss?
I don't know, but with eyes like yours, you couldn't have missed that. You can count along your benches and see how many people count along your side.
I can, aye,
right. Anyway, if you'd wanted to know who was all voting what way, you should just for a roll call vote. Councillor Thompson.
I think it was a question for the Chief Executive.
Yes, thank you, Provost. I have no doubt that the vote was counted accurately. My recollection from the meeting is that was the case. I've checked the position with other senior officers present at the meeting. They're all of a similar view. The other thing I would say is the accuracy of the vote was not challenged at the time, and understanding Order 11.5.3, that could have been done. So I have no doubt that the decision itself is accurate. And I think also it's worth saying that the recording of the meeting is clear on this in terms of hearing the clerk to the committee count out the votes. The vote was taken by a show of hands rather than by a roll call. Such I don't think it's appropriate for me to comment on how any individual member may or may not have voted, but the minute is undoubtedly accurate.
I have to say as well that I already sit in about 30 different bodies. I mean, another one wouldn't have just taken up more time. Anyway.
Sorry,
Councillor Baxter.
Can I come in on that, please?
Just briefly, maybe this is a case for webcasting our meetings.
Thanks. I mean, we're going to have to have a roll call vote for every single thing. I mean, nobody's disputing it was a 7-6. It came as a bit of a surprise, does it, Brian actually got in, to be honest with you, which is why we know who voted and who didn't. But, I mean, I think that's probably why I sat beside Ian Baxter the other day, because that's how Ian actually put him in. But, I mean, there's no question that Councillor Beattie didn't vote, but she's saying in the press that she did, and she actually supported herself. Now, everybody here knows that's exactly the case, so I don't know where we take this, because it's certainly not true what's said in the paper. And I'll certainly know what I could do in the road for a roll call vote every single time I've voted anything. I mean, that'd just be absolutely ludicrous. I think just a wee bit of honesty would be better here. And for us, for the Chief Executive's answer, it's just absolute waffle. That's terrible.
Well, I have to say that I wouldn't believe everyone reading the papers, to be honest with you. I think I've said that in here time and time again. Unlike Councillor Mulligan, I don't have eyes on the side of my head. They're at the front.
Provost.
Okay.
Sorry, there's a lot of flippant answers here. This is an important issue. We have a councillor going into the paper making statements that are clearly not true about what was conducted in this chamber. I think it's important that we hear from the administration, of whom that person's a member, what they think about that, because I feel it's appalling that somebody basically goes into the press and denies what took place at this meeting, which we all sat at, and we all know exactly what happened.
Councillor Thompson.
I mean, clearly there is actually an opportunity within the agenda for questions to me as leader of the council, and none were submitted. If this had been such a burning issue, any member of the council could have put a question to me to ask any direct question they'd wanted to. None have been submitted, so there are no questions to me. I think the Chief Executive has outlined that a vote was taken. The outcome of that vote is recorded in the minute, and without a roll call vote, you cannot identify which members voted which way. It's as simple as that, and I'm afraid that's how we are. Whether that means members want to call a roll call vote for every given situation, I don't think that's necessary, but that's up to individual members to call, and if sufficient numbers support it, then I'm sure that can be the case.
Thank you. Move to item number 6A, a motion by the Labour Group. And moved by Councillor McDominay. Did I manage to do the minutes of the 22nd of April meeting, or did we get interrupted before that? Okay, they passed, yeah. They're for approval anyway. For noting in consideration, Cabinet meeting of the 25th of February. Planning Committee, 25th of February. General Purposes Committee, 18th of February. Local Review Body, 4th of March. Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee, 4th of March, 5th of March, and 5th of March. Audit Committee, 10th of December, 2013. And Safer Communities, 18th of February, 2014. Okay, thank you. There was no questions to the leader. So now move to item 6A, a motion by the Labour Group, and moved by Councillor Montgomery.
Thanks, Provost. I was asking Owen if he's supporting this or no, and he said it would depend on what I said, so I'm going to be quite conciliatory at the start about this. I think there is a review have taken place, and I've got the white paper on the Scotland Futures, and it does mention what the Armed Forces' intention is after independence, if that's where we ended up. There's 12,100 regular soldiers in Scotland at the moment, and 2,000 armed forces personnel. 2,200 reservists, and the aim from what I can gather in the paper, is to 15,000 regular armed forces and 5,000 reservists, which is increasing it by about 50%. So see how that would actually go. I'm not really too worried about that side of it. And certainly in terms of buildings and bases, I'm not really that bothered about that either, although I would obviously like to see Glencore's being retained, and that might be the intention. But there can't be any question that if we do vote for independence, that there'll be British soldiers there, and it'll be the same rest of other areas in Scotland, no question about it, who will be based in an independent country. And I think it would be incumbent to know exactly what's going to be happening on it. I mean, the First Minister, and it's one thing I do totally agree with in the White Paper, is what you get rid of Trident, and I fully support that. I've been in CND for a long time, and I think the sooner that goes, the better. Although, how we would actually stay in NATO, I know there's other issues in countries that don't have nuclear weapons, but we actually have them based in the country at the moment. Why we'd want to be in NATO, I really don't know. It's an outdated Cold War organisation. I don't think we should be in that either. But that's a separate issue, and maybe further down the line. But as I say, getting rid of Trident, I totally agree with that. So I just want the motion, I want the Chief Executive. I mean, there seems to be some answers in the White Paper. I'm not going to go into great depth on that. And if we could get a joint or get agreement for this Council for the Chief Executive to go ahead and get some inquiry so we could hopefully get some answers. That's what I'd be looking for. I mean, I've spoken to guys who are based down at Glencore, and I have to say they don't know. I mean, they don't know what their future is. And, you know, if there's going to be an increase to 20,000 armed forces personnel for just over 13, that's a 50% increase. Now, even if the option was there, and that was all it could be, would be an option for the Fusiliers in Penicuik for the Glencore's barracks to transfer over. Supposing half of them wanted to do that, you need to find the other half, and then obviously another half again. I mean, it is a wee bit of a mess, and, you know, I'm not going to get into the rights and wrongs of the White Paper. I mean, I could be here all day of doing that. I just think it would be nice to get an answer for the soldiers that are there, or a bit of clarity from the armed forces and from the Scottish Government. And I think we could task the Chief Executive with doing that without taking this as partisan sides. I don't think it would be too difficult.
Councillor Imrie.
Yeah, thanks, Provost. Just to pick up and ask for the full Council to support this motion, in particular Councillor Thompson in Coventry, who, of course, the Glencore's barracks is in the ward that we represent. And it was quite a number of years ago that the then Liberal government down in Westminster decided that they should be building accommodation so families could stay in the same place when the duration of their service was being cast upon. And very interesting to say that we welcomed, certainly all members in the Penicuik area welcomed the forces having a base there. And I think that any of you that have been up there have seen the accommodation that's been there. The women and children that now have a place to live for the foreseeable future, in the knowledge that their loved ones are going away doing work on our behalf, on behalf of the UK. And indeed, certainly the local schools, the local shops have benefited from all that. The uncertainty is, Provost, that of course the answers, as Councillor Montgomery says, aren't there for all to see. And if we pass the motion today, all we're doing is asking perhaps the Chief Executive to go away and find out, to get an answer so that we all know where we stand, because certainly people in the community there are uncertain about what's going to happen. And for the first time, as I said, they've had a base in which they can bring up their families, because up until then they were very, very nomadic, and they were all brought together. So it's not been partisan in any way. It's a genuine call on a group of people that live within our community, that are part of our community and have been welcomed into our community. And I just hope that the Council can support the motion in front of us today. Thanks very much, Provost.
Councillor De Vink.
Well, must say, when I read that motion, I thought that really anyone else that would read that motion would be aghast, because the Royal Highland Fusiliers, who were stationed in Glencore's barracks, are part of the Regiment of Scotland. Now, had you read the White Paper, as was suggested, you would have seen that all the units of the Scottish Army will carry on the names, identities, and traditions of the Scotland's regiments, including those lost in the defence reorganisation in 2006. Allow me to explain to the Labour Group that Scotland remains part of the United Kingdom and that no Scottish soldier will be stationed in a foreign country. This characterization of an independent Scotland as a foreign country is yet another example of calculated misinformation. An independent Scotland would clearly not be a foreign country, since it will retain the Queen as head of state, will ultimately maintain a currency union, and the social union or British identity is not controlled by government. That is something people choose for themselves. A foreign country is a land that would potentially be regarded as an enemy power, as Ireland was regarded until 1949, when the Ireland Act established that the Republic would be not a foreign country for the purpose of British law. Finally, allow me to point out that the referendum is not 4 months away, is 4 months and 2 days away, not 5 months. But then counting has not been New Labour's strongest point. I move that this motion gets withdrawn and resubmitted, or that it gets soundly defeated.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. There's only one word, really, that I take issue with in this, apart from the definition of British post-independence, and that's the word they in the third line. If that were replaced by there will be British soldiers, because some soldiers would potentially consider themselves to be British because they've been posted there from other parts of the current UK. To say that all the soldiers would then be British, I think, is not true. Some of them would consider themselves to be Scots in an independent Scotland. But there will be some who consider themselves not to be Scots, to be from other parts of the current UK, but are stationed in Scotland. And I think if the word they were replaced with there, I would have no issue with this motion.
Councillor Thompson.
Thanks, Professor. I'm actually proposing an amendment to the motion here. I'll pass round. There should be enough copies for everyone. Essentially, my amendment will be to delete after, in the first line, Midlothian Council, and insert to the end, it commends the commitment and dedication of our armed forces, in particular local regiment, two Scots, based at Glencorse Barracks, Pennycook. Recognises that over years of underfunding, serious questions have been raised regarding the equipment provided by the British state to our armed forces, with claims that soldiers are having to buy their own items while Westminster politicians chase vanity projects such as Trident. Recalls that the Scottish regiments had until recently enjoyed the use of historic regimental names, sadly abandoned by previous Westminster government, and welcomes the details outlined in the Scottish Government White Paper indicating that an independent Scotland would operate a traditional defence force and that if the same proportion of our tax were to be spent in defence, this would result in a significant increase in defence funding in Scotland. Now, I welcome Councillor Montgomery's acknowledgement of the detail within the White Paper outlining the significant increase that is proposed there, because these aren't numbers that are coming from the Scottish Government, these aren't numbers that are coming from the Yes campaign. Parliamentary answers from the Defence Minister has shown the significant contribution comes from Scotland to support our armed forces at something in the region of £3.3 billion. Yet the UK defence spend in Scotland is some £1.4 billion less than this. I suppose this goes to highlight somewhat the significant drain that Trident is to the budgets of all forces, and the fact that we spend all this money pouring it into a project that you would hope would never ever need to be used, let alone want to be used, when in fact our troops who are operating across the globe in many conflicts which are well and truly deserved and needed, peacekeeping operations, we are not able to supply them with the gear that they need. We've seen significant decreases in the number of our forces over years. The The numbers, standing army, from 102,000 to 82,000 by 2017, the Ministry of Defence says, to cover up the £38 billion black hole. We're looking at 25,000 civilian staff redundancies in the MOD. I absolutely agree with Councillor Montgomery. There's significant uncertainty about the future of our armed forces, but the biggest uncertainty there is what happens to them if we don't vote yes in September and if we stay in the current union and we continue to see this attack on our forces by Westminster governments simply pursuing vanity projects and not actually getting behind the troops to support them in the job that they need to do.
Councillor Bryant.
I would like to second the amendment.
Councillor Coventry.
Yeah, I'd just like to point out that 30% of the garrison in Penicuik are facing redundancy. Morally questionable. The current Scottish Government have said it's looking at a policy of no compulsory redundancies for serving members of the armed forces, which is in contrast to the Westminster Government's decision to dismiss thousands of our servicemen and women. Indeed, between 2000 and 2012, the number of defence personnel in Scotland was cut by more than 35%. The current Scottish Government proposals is to have 15,000 regular service personnel across the services, an increase of almost 4,000 on current numbers. And then just to make the point, as a result of Westminster policy, regular army personnel numbers have been reduced to around 3,300 currently in Scotland, which is far smaller than comparably sized nations. For example, Denmark has 8,155.
Kept this on, Councillor Thompson.
That does that is having the motion, is it? No.
Okay.
In advance of you, sum up for the amendment.
Can I get clarification?
Yes, it's just the word they in the third line. If that were there, because as it stands, it assumes that all the soldiers would be considered British. I don't think that's the case. It could be whole regiments were recruited in Scotland. And is that your amendment to your original proposal? There instead of there, yes.
I have to say that doesn't it read correctly then if you change it to the. It says, from the United Kingdom, there will in effect be British soldiers.
It's there.
There. As in there. No, they are.
No, I'm quite happy to accept
that. Yeah, Provost, I'll be very brief. I think I don't really need to add too much more. I think what I would say is, obviously, we have a council has a standing decision to have a seminar on the white paper at which a number of questions can be asked, and perhaps that deals with the point Councillor Montgomery is looking at on seeking these questions to be answered. So we already have a decision on that. But I think beyond that, I think just a wee anecdote. We heard recently of a Russian submarine operating somewhere north of Scotland, and the first that we actually knew about it was when one of the submariners tweeted and suddenly this was picked up by somebody else. So at no point were our defence forces aware of this until the power of Twitter came in to save the day.
I believe we've also had a couple of visits for the Russian Navy in the North Sea, and it took the Royal Navy 24 hours to get to see them. They've got more admirals in the Royal Navy now than they have ships. Councillor Montgomery, would you like to sum up?
Yeah, thanks, Provost. Well, I'm not accepting an amendment from Councillor Thompson, but I'm quite happy to accept the change of word from or the amendment for Councillor Baxter. I mean, I've got to be honest with you, I really tried to be quite conciliatory about this because I think the soldiers that are based at Glencore really do need to get some answers. But, you know, when we had the explanation flowing for his amendment, I mean, it's really a counter-motion, you know, and it's not really an amendment at all. No, I'm not complaining about that. I mean, it's all part of what we do. But I think if you look at the whole picture of the UK forces in Scotland, and I don't know where your figures, Councillor Coventry, but even in the government's own paper, the Scottish forces have actually increased. They haven't been reduced. And if there's a 30% redundancy coming in at Glencorse, well, I've never heard of that, so I don't know where that's coming from. So if you could get me that information, it'd be quite useful, because obviously that's something that the Chief Executive will be able to pick up if this motion is successful. I don't want to see Scotland keeping tried in. I've already said that. and why we're going to be in NATO, I don't know. And if you read the white paper, it does actually state that they're unlikely to have any submarines in the Scottish Navy, because they're far too expensive to buy and too expensive to run. And you couldn't possibly build one in the year and a half it would take between the referendum result and Scotland being fully declared an independent state. And, you know, whether you like it or not, Councillor Devinc, we will be a separate country and there will be border controls. If you don't think there will be, you're way off the mark. Well, I think we will be. That's what independence actually means. I mean, I actually look it up in the dictionary because I did it myself before I come down. And, you know, I think the sooner we get this actually resolved, the better. And I'm asking that the Chief Executive is tasked with dealing with this. And as far as counting, there's not been a strong point in the Labour group. I think the question Councillor Milligan asked earlier on would demonstrate it's not a very competent point for anybody in this council at all, because they couldn't work out the six that actually voted for Councillor Provost Wallace when it was actually a vote. But just to finish off, I'm actually quite concerned about the way the No campaign's been run, and I'm not too happy with some of the aspects of it. And I will be voting yes in September. I'll be voting yes to keep Glencorse. I'll be voting yes to keep the pound. I'll be voting yes to keep a UK passport. So if we're not going to be an independent and separate country, why are we going to have our own passports? So there will be passport controls and border controls. I'm voting to keep my pension. I'm voting yes for that, and I'm voting to keep Scotland as part of the UK. So I'm actually voting yes in September, but I'll be voting no in actually the referendum vote. Provost, I don't see anything wrong with this motion. I think it clarified for the people that are at Glencorse, for the families that are there. We built four classrooms at Morriswood Primary School, two by the MOD and two by the council, to house the youngsters that were coming here. And I think it would be an absolute tragedy if they weren't allowed to stay here. And the kernel of this whole motion is there's no question about it. This is a British, the personnel that are there are in the British Army, not the Scottish Army. It's a Scottish regiment, I agree with that. But they're in the British Army, they've done the Queen's shilling. And if we actually vote for independence, there are going to be British soldiers who will actually be based in Scotland, which will be an independent country. And I'd ask you to support the motion.
Right, we have an amendment from Councillor Thompson. Those in favour of the amendment, please show. Those in favour of the motion? In which case, I cast my vote for the amendment. Thank you. We move to item 6B, and this is a motion by myself.
Provost, I'd like to challenge the competence of the motion, given that energy is a reserve matter.
It is not the energy issue I am raising. It is a direct threat to the Scottish Government from the UK Government. And that's, I will go forward on that. In April, I attended a nuclear-free local authority meeting in Clydebank and was horrified to listen to a report which stated that the UK Energy Minister, Michael Fallon, had warned the Scottish Government that if it made a submission to a public consultation set up by the European Commission regarding Hinkley Point nuclear power plant, it would be viewed by the UK Government as a hostile act. When a country believes it is subject to a hostile act, it has the right to use armed force by all necessary means available to it to deter and, if necessary, to destroy that threat. I ask this Council to support this motion to demand from Michael Fallon an explanation for the use of such aggressive language against a democratically elected peaceful government and against the Scottish people when we are supposed to be in a union of equals. I ask you to support this motion. Thank you. Do I have a seconder for Councillor Bryant? Thank you. Okay, Councillor Imrie.
Thanks. I don't actually know, Provost, if you're competent to actually rule a motion in order when you're actually moving it, but I'm not. I missed my chance to have a go about that, and I'll have to seek clarification at a later stage on what one should and shouldn't do. However, I do say that starting off in the first paragraph, Provost, I didn't know that Scottish Energy Minister Fergus Ewing had Somerset within his remit. The last time I looked at the map of the UK, Somerset was in the south of England. Now, maybe geography has never been my best subject matter, but nevertheless, I'm sure everybody around the table will agree with me that Somerset is in England. On the third paragraph, for example, the Scottish Energy Minister, I tried to find out what in actual fact the remit of a Scottish Energy Minister was, and the only thing I can come up is the man for windmills. I mean, he certainly has got a lot of hot air, but notwithstanding that, I think that the motion today is just nonsense. Now, you said you were at a nuclear-free zone meeting, and I'll leave some of my other colleagues to pick up on that. The difference is that this is a Europe that is challenging whether in actual fact any energy policy will be able to have a state subsidy or not. And I don't know, bearing in mind that it's the UK government that decide on energy policy, what any remit the Scottish Energy Minister happens to have. And I think I have to say that Michael Fallon is quite right in saying this is a UK response to Brussels. It's not a Scottish response to Brussels, it's a UK response to Brussels, and therefore I will not be able to support your motion.
Councillor Bennett.
Thanks, Chair. I agree with Russell on this. I don't think it is a competent motion because energy isn't a devolved issue. It is the directive of the UK government. And I'm quite aware you would hear it, Provost, at the Nuclear Free Local Authority, because I used to sit in it. But the Nuclear Free Local Authority isn't a Scottish organisation, it's a British-Irish organisation. And therefore, they talk about, in general, nuclear energy throughout the whole UK and Ireland. So that's why it would be raised there. But really, and I'm not a supporter of nuclear power, I think everybody knows that. But the fact that it's a nuclear point in Hinkley Point in Somerset, I didn't kind of background to this, and I just didn't think it's competent business for Midlothian Council to be discussing something that was discussed between a Scottish Energy Minister and the UK Energy Minister as regarding Brussels, because at the end of the day, Scotland isn't in the European Union, it's the UK that's in the European Union. So that issue would be taken up by the UK government, or it would be taken up by MPEs. I would say if the Scottish Nationalist Party wanted to complain about this, then they've got representation at the Westminster Parliament, Angus Robertson or something like that. Should have been taking it up down there, with the ministers down there. But I don't think it's an issue for Scotland, and I certainly don't think it's an issue for Midlothian Council, and I certainly wouldn't support it either.
Councillor Thompson.
Just very briefly on the competency, I mean, we've literally 5 minutes ago had a motion on defence, which is a reserved matter, where the mover of the motion was calling for us to write to ask for explanations on and clarification in detail. We now have a motion on energy that is a reserved matter, where the call is for us to write to the UK Minister to explain a position. I'm sorry, on the simple technicalities of the point there, there is no difference here. Both are reserved matters, both are motions seeking a clarification. And if the first one was competent, no questions raised about that, I can't understand how we can have questions on the competence of this motion.
Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Provost. Like Councillor Imrie, I'm sometimes difficult with geography too, but the last time I looked, Scotland was in the European Union, so was Somerset, and this was a representation to a European body, so I think we're very much entitled to do it, and especially since the motion really is questioning the actual aggressive language. And I would support the motion.
Just for clarity here, once again, the Labour group tried to muddy the water on what this actually states. It's no speaking about Hinkley Point being a nuclear power station, nor is it about Fergus Ewing being the Scottish Energy Minister. It's not about Brussels. It's about a threat from, and it wasn't Fergus Ewing that got in touch with Michael Fallon. It was Michael Fallon got in touch with the Scottish Government to threaten that if they put forward a submission to a public consultation called by the European Commission, which they're quite entitled to do, and no one knew if they had or not. That's not the point. The point is this man has threatened practically invasion is Scotland, if the Scottish Government used its democratic position to put in a submission regarding a nuclear power point at Hinkley Point in Somerset. That is the motion today. Nothing to do with energy, nothing to do with Brussels, nothing to do with whether Fergus Ewing is competent to bring it to speak about these things. It's about the aggressive language used by the UK Government on a democratically elected Scottish government, a threat to the Scottish people, and therefore we should ask this man to explain it. And by the way, Alex Salmond has already asked David Cameron, to explain what the implications of this threat were. Councillor Muirhead.
Provost, I find this motion and the debate here quite depressing, because I wonder where we're going. You know, irrespective of what the vote is in September, is this the kind of thing we've got to look forward to, where we're, you know, we've got maybe misguided or, you know, misappropriate language being used by a UK minister, being taken up our time round this chamber, when we've got a lot more issues that we need to be dealing with here than talking about things like this. I find it extremely depressing, and I can see, irrespective of how the vote goes in September, this is the way we're going to be heading if we didn't really get a grip.
If you talk about inappropriate language, we'll go back to the last motion. It also claimed that the Scottish soldiers would be foreigners in their own country. It states it quite clearly, a foreign country. Councillor Montgomery.
Well, I wasn't going to mention that, but I didn't actually say that. The motion actually says there'd be British soldiers based in the foreign country. There's no question of that. Whether they're actually Scottish identity or not is another issue. And just on the issue about whether it's the Somerset or reserve matters anything to do with us, you could argue that idea, but the last time I looked at the map, Penicuik was in Scotland.
OK. We now move to the vote. Those in favour of the motion, please show. Those against? Motion is carried. Thank you. Now move to item 6C, a motion from Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Provost. As Cabinet Member for Education, I just wanted to note this. Midlothian Midlothian noted this. Tragic murder of a talented teacher approaching, no doubt, a well-earned retirement. Thankfully, this incident is very rare. The last murder of a teacher was the primary teacher, Gwen Mayer, in Dunblane, and just after the murder of Headmaster Philip Lawrence in London. So these things are very rare, but I think we should note them. And I would seek that a letter of condolence be sent on behalf of this council to our employers.
Councillor Commentary.
Yeah, I'd like to second the motion about this tragic murder of Anne Maguire at Corpus Christi Catholic College in Leeds. Teachers hold in their hands the success of our country and the well-being of society. They are the key to helping every child in this country realise their full potential. Teachers are the most important fighters in the battle to make opportunity more available and create a more equal society. And teachers give children the tools by which they can become authors of their own life story and builders of a better world. So I'm very happy to second the motion.
Anybody else? Okay. Happy to accept the motion. Thank you. We move to item number 7, Scottish Enterprise East Regional Advisory Board. A report by Mr Blair.
Thanks, Provost. This report sets out the background to the Scottish Enterprise East Regional Advisory Board and specifically membership rotation within the board. In paragraph 2.4, I've detailed the formal invitation for the Council to join the Advisory Board and, if approved, seeking Council to confirm Councillor Bryant as the Council's rep, which is in line with the decisions taken at the first Council following the election on the 22nd of May 2012. Thanks, Provost.
Councillor Thompson.
Yeah, as we hear, we've already taken the decision as a Council and appointed Councillor Bryant to this, so really today is just formally about us joining or taking up our rotation, I suppose, as the member for the board for Scottish Enterprise East. So I move the recommendations in the report and confirm the appointment as made on the 22nd of May 2012 of Councillor Bryant.
Thank you. That accepted by the Council. Thank you. Item number 8, diversion of a public path at Bilston. A report by Mr Moffat, Head of Commercial Operations.
Thanks, Provost. As members are probably aware, there's an ongoing development at Bilston carried out by Taylor Wimpey. The purpose of this report is to seek approval to promote an order which allows for the diversion of the public path that goes from the kind of north to the south of that development. The plan in Appendix 2 shows the temporary diversion that would be in place until that proportion of the development where the existing path lies. So essentially, moving to the recommendation, Council has recommended to instruct the Director of Resources to progress with the diversion order in line with the process that has been described under Item 2.
Councillor Rosie.
Yeah, can I recommend we accept?
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. I have no issue with the permanent change once the estate's been built. I do question, though, the temporary diversion. It is quite a long way round, and if people are using it for recreational purposes, then I don't really have an issue with that. But if there are people who are perhaps using this route to get to the shops, to get to the work, to get to a bus stop or school, for instance, then that is quite some diversion. I'm at a loss to understand how the developers cannot have a temporary path, which is then moved as they build parts of the estate.
I'd like to respond, Mr. Moffat.
Yeah, essentially what we have is a construction site, and the intention for the developer would be to ensure that people don't stray within that construction site. And that was seen as the most reasonable proposal going forward.
Councillor Baxter.
Can I just come back for information then on the numbers of people who are liable to be affected by this? Because it doesn't look as if there's that much in the way of any buildings on the other side of the estate. So maybe we're talking about very few people actually using the temporary path.
Unfortunately, I don't have numbers to hand, but I can certainly provide that for you. My understanding, though, is, as you suggest, it's not a well-used path, but I can certainly provide that information.
Yeah. Provost, just for clarity, were there any objections to this? If there weren't, according to the way this should have been dealt with, it should have been by a report to the Cabinet, not to the Council. Or am I reading that wrong?
Sorry, the purpose of this paper is actually to seek approval to promote the order, and then, if there are any objections, deal with them thereafter. So the order hasn't actually been advertised at this point.
Okay.
Happy to accept the recommendations. Thank you. Item 9, diversion of Core Path crossing the Mayfield Complex site. Report by Mr. Sherritt, Chair of Property and Facilities Management.
Thanks, Provost. Similar to the last item on the agenda, this is a diversion of the Core Path, which is the main route from Mayfield to the existing school at New Battle High School. We're seeking to divert that path towards the new site where the future school will be built, and do that during the summer holidays this coming July. And the reason for that is to ensure that there's a completed path when the school is recommenced in August, and to ensure that the school doesn't, or the route, safe route to school doesn't get disrupted in the construction works. We're taking advantage of the diversion to resurface the remainder of that path as well during this work, and that the cost of that will be met within the project budget for the New Battle Replacement School. We're looking for, similar to the last report, for approval so that we can place the advert and then come back to Cabinet with any objections in the future.
Thank you. Councillor Rosie.
Yeah, once again, recommend approval for this so that we can push on and get the work completed during the school holidays.
Accept the recommendations. Thank you. We now move to item 10, which is in private session. So could any member of the public please leave the chamber? Thank you. Okay, and I move to